Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the ForgeCast. I'm Nelikin, joined by
Lovecore.
I'm Meridim.
And today we're going to start off with talking about the PC FAQ.
Yeah, the PC FAQ just came out on Monday, April 8th. So it was, I know everybody out there probably read it. I kind of felt like it was more of a response to the community feedback or outlash, if you will, on the PC beta. And it covered some pretty basic things, stuff we talked about in the last ForgeCast that we did.
And funny, they come out with this FAQ exactly about what we talked about.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about it and they came out. So it's good to know that we're all on the same page there. So one of the things, the first thing that was mentioned in the beta is, why does the PC beta have fewer features than the iOS? Essentially, to me, their answer was that the iOS version was already in programming before they even started the PC. That's pretty much their exclamation, is that their PC, they failed to hire a PC developer before they hired the iOS developer.
Well, let's be fair. They already had an iOS developer because of Ascension.
They had an iOS developer who said he would gladly make the beta for them as long as he got a job during the Kickstart. How accurate that is, I don't know. I think it's pretty well known. I mean, they already have iOS and...
Yeah, what I've heard was consistent with that. Justin Gary knew an iOS programmer who had offered to work on credit, get the demo up and ready to go for the Kickstarter so that they could kind of show off the game. And that makes sense.
Yeah.
Then, right now, I don't think they should be doing iOS development at all.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that any iOS development should just be behind the scenes and they're... Yeah, maybe that is. I don't think we're really probably going to see another iOS push.
I hope to hell not. People
will be very upset.
Bad idea.
I hope they stop working on the iOS version of this. Just, publicly facing. I hope internally, obviously, they're still doing it. And, boy, I sure hope that they do have some of those Android developers that they were going to pay for the Ascension Android Kickstarter working on this as well. That would be pretty great, too.
If not, give me a call.
The next thing that was on there is, why doesn't it work on XP systems? And this, again, we touched on this on our last cast. Just a glaring oversight. Their answer was, it will be supported in the future.
Yeah, that answer is a... That's the worst answer in this. I appreciate that they're trying to address it, but that, to people who don't understand why it's not working on XP, that really does not give them any information.
Any information or any solace in that, for that fact. I mean,
no, not even
I know...
A, sorry.
I know people who are running old PCs, and they just don't have the funds to upgrade, or they want, or they're not really big into computer gaming like a lot of us are, and they've just never really felt like they want to upgrade the computer. It does what they want it to do. Maybe they just play Facebook games or whatever. Those are the people who are interested in this game that can't play.
Those are the main people that you're targeting who don't already play a card game.
Right. You know, if you're trying to...
Because the biggest thing about Soulforge is it's going to be accessible to more people more easily, and most of those people probably have XP.
Probably. The next question that was mentioned in the Q&A is, why can't I access my purchase starter decks for the PC beta? Well, that being said, it's not the iOS demo, so that's why you can't do it. And that's essentially what they said, that they're going to push for that in the future in the next PC update, whatever. When I was actually sifting through the Soulforge files, I noticed they did actually have all the starter deck art in there. They do actually have a bug reporter in there, and my game crashed yesterday, and it actually popped up.
Me too.
And
I meant to use it too.
I meant to tell you that is in there. It's something we've kind of harped on. So that's cool that it's there. But yeah, the art and everything does seem to be in place for that PC beta. I think they're just going to kick it over.
Yeah.
The next thing that was on there is, my game doesn't look as good as it does. It doesn't look as good on my PC as it does on my iPad. What's wrong? Well, the problem here is they don't have a graphics team. I think that's their problem. I think that they haven't even worked out resolution, anything like that. I don't think they've really put too much time in. I think they literally took the iPad resources and just dumped them into this. So when you maximize it at another resolution, you get, again, pixely buttons and this and that. You get, poor resolution support, which will be fixed. If they don't fix it, people will not play it based on the lack of polish.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that as an issue, but it's not something that really bugs me at this point. Like, there's a lot of stuff left to do.
Yeah.
Get me some more cards first. Yeah. I'll worry about the fuzzy buttons later. Yes, it bugs me, but no, it's not something that absolutely has to change right now. The font, on the other hand.
Yeah, the font could use a little bump. I mean, everything, polish-wise, it could use a big jump, but I'd rather see them implement all the back-end stuff and then polish later.
Yeah, I'd like to see a lot of focus on actual playability instead of just how nice it looks. It needs to come in, but it does not need to come in
anytime
first.
Soon. Right, yep. The next one was, computer easy is too easy, but computer normal is too hard. Are there plans for any other difficulties? They essentially said that they're going to be renamed. They're just pretty much talking on the difficulty at this point. They said they were going to jokingly rename it to Computer Big Jerk or something similar.
I laughed.
I honestly don't think Computer Normal is too hard. I don't know. What do you guys think? I don't think.
Well, the question isn't if it's too hard. Is it harder than the iOS one?
I don't think so. I think a lot of people have said that the iOS AI is more difficult. I don't think that's the truth. I think the situation is that there's more decks for the AI to play against, or play as and against, so I think it's a little bit different. I think that's where we see it. I don't think it's any harder. I think that just the PC demo decks that we have just lend themselves to more aggressive, fast-paced play, and that's how the computer plays them.
I've been getting beat on the PC a little more than I was on iOS, but I don't want to attribute anything to that kind of anecdotal experience. I think what some people are complaining about is the gap between those two.
Yes.
Computer normal isn't too hard to be in the game, but that maybe they ought to make that hard and then add in a level in between.
They do, and they said that in the QA. They do plan to, they've acknowledged the disparity between normal and easy, and they do plan to add an intermediate to that. When we'll see that, I don't know. Maybe when we see all the other good stuff they've promised.
No, and to be fair, AI tuning is pretty notoriously difficult.
Yeah,
you know, especially if your R&D team is all professional Magic players.
Yeah, I know, right?
Or
their AI
card
guy.
Players.
Yeah, I think they've got one AI guy.
Yeah.
And he, you know, and this came up when last time they said they were going to just revamp the whole AI or make it cheat. He said, no, we're just going to make the AI better. So there it is. You did your job. Get working on Skynet. The next one, the last question was, there are a lot of people out there now, as we all know, who are excited for the game now. Now that they have seen the PC and they see people streaming and they've seen the iOS, people want to know, how do I get into the beta?
Mm-hmm.
You can't. I'm sorry. Just this week, Soulforge Game, at Soulforge Game on Twitter, was giving away, and Kibler was giving away, they were giving away beta keys.
Mm-hmm.
That was your first chance. If you missed it, you should subscribe. You should really follow those guys on Twitter. And follow us on Twitter. We retweet it when it happens, too. That's the only way at this point. They said they're going to add more. Who knows when we'll see it. So that was the PC FAQ update that they did that was just released again. That was released on the 8th. And that's something we talked about, again, in the last Forgecast. Was that 7? Forgecast 7. That's the one we talked about that. You can hear more of our thoughts on that. The next thing I wanted to talk about is kind of the topic, I guess, of this cast is R&D and future sets. Not per se relating to each other, but just as two separate things. Their R&D department and how they plan on handling future sets. You know, Nelikin and I were kind of talking about this, and you too, Murd, and on how their R&D team, as we right now perceive it and know it, is fairly small.
Yes.
A few months ago, Nelikin, what did you say it was?
There was an interview on the Daily Metagame with Patrick Sullivan a few months after he moved over to Stoneblade, and he had said that their R&D team was 4 people. Great, this was like 2.5 months ago, so I hope it's bigger now, but
yeah,
that's
hope it's
very
now, yeah.
Few people.
And that's their entire R&D team. That's not a card balance team.
Right, that's entirety. You know, and I think a lot of responsibility falls on everybody who's in that team. Everybody who's part of Stoneblade, I think, is also responsible for R&D. Whether that's not their title alone, I think that all the responsibility falls on those guys.
Oh, yeah, and he said in the interview that John and Justin, sometimes they come in and they get involved when they have the time, but they're mostly focused on the business side of it.
Yeah.
We kind of brainstormed on it a little bit, and we talked on the thought of a beta realm. Or R&D realm, and we talked about, you know, crowdsourcing their R&D or how they want to deal with it. I think that right now, I think most of their R&D is on the back burner. I think that those guys are, yeah, sure, they're R&Ding cards internally that we don't see, and there's a lot of stuff that I'm sure they're doing, but I don't think that R&D is their primary focus at this point. I think that they're really trying to focus on, or they should be focusing on getting, you know, the PC beta into a real beta state. That way, when beta does release and they do give us access to all the cards, then their R&D team can go full swing and really start to hammer out stuff. The fact that you will have all these beta testers helping with this and giving feedback on these cards is going to help them a lot. It really is. Yeah. I mean, there's people out there that are going to see interactions maybe that R&D didn't see or think about things that R&D didn't do, which is, you know, it happens in all every game, period. Mm-hmm. It happens in every game. And that's one of the reasons that there were so many erratas in Magic the Gathering. Granted, in Soulforge, we won't have to worry about looking up a card's errata in a rulebook. It will just be able to be digitally changed, which is awesome. But it'll be out there, and it will happen.
And there's kind of an important distinction there. When I first brought it up, we were talking about not wanting the community to sort of drive decisions. And I'm not interested in that. I think that they've got some smart guys and
girls,
conceivably. Yeah. We haven't seen, I don't think, I meet the team yet.
Well, there is somebody, and I think she's their community manager.
Well, there's Emily. Yes, of course. Emily. So. How could I forget? My apologies, Emily. But that being said, generating that amount of data is something that they just don't have the time for. Maybe they have the tools for it. They can do it digitally and randomize a whole bunch of stuff. But you're right, that you'll never really see how it is out in the wild with just crazy plays. Like, you'll see the smart plays, and they're already thinking about that. It's like, oh, I could use it this way. But they're not doing something totally dumb with it.
And looking at what happens. Yeah, exactly.
And so I think that's going to end up being a good way for them to save money is by generating that data through
us.
And we mentioned not necessarily 100% public.
Right, yeah. That's really what my solution would have been, is to pull, say, 10 or 20 members from the community or that you know or however it may be, and pull them into, give them essentially VPN access or create a server or a game client that has different cards in it. And, you know, after they've played, say, 100 games, 50 games, they are required to submit a feedback report.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I've had to do on other games that I've played. You play for X amount of time log, the game freezes up, and I've actually had to write a detailed feedback with over 1,000 characters.
Right.
That, as somebody who's passionate about this game, that's something I will do anyway. So why don't you just let us help? You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a good solution. I think there's tons of people out there who would love to do this type of thing. Obviously, you're under a strict non-disclosure agreement, but with your team so small, you'd obviously be able to tell who was leaking information if that ever became an issue. I think that is a good way to start getting more eyes on cards and seeing different things. Will we see it? I doubt it.
What would you think about having it maybe as a tournament reward or finding ways to target very active
players? Yes.
As sort of for inclusion into that, as sort of, it's a trade-off because you're kind of asking them to help you do your work. But at the same time, it almost feels like a reward to get that early access and perhaps input if you're specifically asking a very small group of players, like you're mentioning, and you pick people who are very active and passionate and knowledgeable, then you can take some feedback from them. Mm-hmm.
I think that I would be, as a tournament player, as a serious tournament player, that's something I would love to do. I would gladly rack my brain to play through a tournament to get that as a prize, to help being an R&D. Yeah, most definitely. But that's just me. There's a lot of people out there going, no, why would I want to do that? Just give me a digital playmat or a random animated card or something. You know what I mean? There's people out there who want to do that, and there's people out there who don't want to do that.
And that's the trick. It's somebody who wants to do that is exactly who you want on your team.
Exactly.
They're going to be an amazing... Somebody's actually going to file a bug report.
Right.
You know, most beta realm... You look at the PBE on League, and it's technically supposed to be their test realm. They're checking out champions. Nobody's on the PBE to test out champions. Everybody goes there because you have everything unlocked, and you can try something out before you go buy it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Nobody's, you know, the amount of people slamming that server, the amount of resources that they're allocating to that, they're hardly getting anything out of it for solid feedback.
Yep.
I think it would definitely be an interesting and probably very beneficial approach to attempt to keep it to a very small team of people that you know and show a track record of giving good feedback.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so talking about R&D for cards, for the first set, for the beta, let people in. Who cares? Everybody, when this set is finally released, when this game is released, everybody is going to know everything.
Yep.
Because they're still working on getting their system in order. And that right now is more important than people knowing cards. For future sets, the community should not be involved at all.
At all.
What I'm hoping to see with this game, first of all, is pre-releases. I love pre-releases. It's a real chance to get your hands on cars before anybody else has. And letting the community in on R&D completely compromises that. The next problem is the metagame. What I'm hoping with this game, they set up something similar to Magic, where they release sets every few months and give the metagame time to develop.
Yes. That's...
And if you let people in R&D, people are going to be ahead on the metagame already. They're already going to know broken combinations. They're already going to know synergies and how every deck works. And that's bad.
Right. I agree with that to an extent. I mean, I think that letting players in on that is good and bad. Again, it's a double-edged sword. It really is. I mean, it is going to hurt the metagame, which is something that's very, very big in TCGs. Very big. But at the same time, the metagame, as we know it, would evolve. Decks that from people who would be in
this
the R&D.
This is true. Metagames evolve based on what deck people are playing.
Right.
So even people who are ahead will be behind, not behind, but the decks that people will be playing when the set comes out, those decks might not work.
Right, exactly.
But at the same time, as it develops, it will probably develop along the same lines, and people are already going to know how to beat the new decks that come out.
Right, right. So you are right. It is bad for the game. It is bad for the game to do that type of thing.
But at the same time, we have no idea how they're going to release sets. We have no idea what they're going to do.
Yeah, and this is something we touched on, again, in a previous cast, that we hope to see the block set kind of rotation. I do not want to see 5 cards every week.
No.
I think if they do 5 cards every week, I would be
seriously I hate that. I play games like that. I absolutely hate that. Yeah. It feels like you have to play just to keep up.
Just to keep up, right. Right. And, you know, when you do the block rotation, people can get into the game, play, take, let's say, a month off from the game, something happened, they just can't play, or they don't want to play, or they're bored of it, or burnt out, or whatever. And then when the new block comes, they can come back and feel refreshed and, you know, feels like a new game, which is awesome. And that's something actually I did with League for a while. I stopped playing League for, you know, 6 months and came back and it just felt better. You know what I mean? There was more characters in the pool. There was patches and fixes and all this. So
really, I always felt like I was behind and need to relearn everything.
No, I never felt that way.
When I took a small break from League, and I mean, I'm talking, it was like 2 to 3 weeks, and I came back and I felt lost.
Really?
I never lost.
Yeah. That's an experience I've never felt. That's never applied
to me. There was a pretty significant
in a long
patch.
Time. Now I have not played in a long
with
time.
With all the pro players out now and the metagame changing drastically all the time. Well, not drastically, but the metagame changing all the time, which filters down through all the players, the game changes.
Yeah.
What champions are good now weren't good before,
then, right,
and what champions
exactly.
People are playing, they weren't playing before.
Yeah, if you pay attention to League's kind of professional league, the LCS, the amount of champs that kind of come into and out of rotation, even though they haven't been buffed or nerfed at all, it's crazy.
And that's something we're going to see in Soulforge. That's something that will directly relate in Soulforge. Sleeper cards will show up. So that's just, you know, again, that's something that we hope to see. And Nelican, you're right. Having community in on the R&D will ruin that. That is something to, I guess, be aware of.
Having a majority of the community, having enough of the community in that the cards get spoiled.
Right. Well, the thing is...
Because if it's 30 people who are already strong tournament players...
Right. If it is a group of 30 strong tournament players, they're going to see those decks anyway. But there has been a lot of times in Magic where I have sat for hours and hours and hours reversing my local metagame to create a deck to win. And it's worked, and I've done it, but if you give those R&D people that option to do this months ahead of time, it's not such a chore. You know what I mean? It really is just a natural evolution of deck building. So to continue having people rethink decks and rethink combos and strategies and cards and combinations, you do need everybody starting from a blank slate.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think you're absolutely right about the releasing in blocks as well. To tell you the truth, I had not even considered the idea of them releasing small amounts of cards on a much smaller interval.
Well, they actually mentioned it in the last FAQ that they did, that they had not decided how they were going to release sets.
Yeah.
Which I was just like, whoa. This is like a...
Yeah, it was a really big red flag for us, actually.
This is dangerous here. I don't like where this is going.
Yeah, well, hopefully the community agrees and they vocalize that. If you're listening to this and you agree with us, maybe we should let them know.
Yeah.
Something on the farms poll? Or tweet or a poll actually would be
maybe
a great idea.
Maybe we can
idea.
Do a community poll on that when we're done with this. You know, I actually don't know if Buddy Press supports polling or if they have it turned on the official Soulforge site, but we'll make one.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll figure it out one way or the other if it's not. I believe that it's supported in the forum.
I think you're right, too. I remember seeing poll on a few posts, but I don't ever remember.
I can't remember if they linked out. Yeah. But yeah, we'll figure something out.
Because actually, I'm interested in the rest of the... I think the community might be with us on this one. I think that a majority of the community wants blocks. I think they want a standard TCG feel.
Yeah.
Well, when you think about it, or like without having this conversation about it first, just on the surface, I'd have been like, oh, yeah, like League, you get a little something.
Right, you get a little something every week, right.
But then when you think about it in context with the meta, it makes absolute sense that that would be very damaging.
Well, yeah. The limited.
Limited format is...
You know, one set, then another set, and then all three sets in one.
Right,
and
block
like
sets. I mean, it plays on the different formats of the game would have to offer. I mean, it's hard to do a limited tournament, you know, where you get a booster deck, you know, you get a starter deck and a few packs to make something out of. That makes it difficult if you're just leaking a few cards every week.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you don't see cool things like, sure, you'll see an on-run of cool tribal synergy, like, but you don't see, like, the theme of the block is, say, slivers or something like that. You know, mm-hmm. The theme of the block is spirits or the theme is demons or something like that. You don't see that as a concurrent theme. Sure, it's there if you do a few cards every week, but you don't get that whole feeling as a whole.
I would expect to see mechanics introduced in that way, too.
Yes.
The way they have poison and breakthrough and all that type of stuff. And I believe Magic still works this way, where
absolutely.
A lot of times the sets will introduce a new
mechanic.
Ability.
Actually, I'm kind of let down if a new mechanic doesn't show up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I guess you kind of expect it at this point. So, yeah, I would, you know, I think that's a lot easier to do if you can do it a chunk at a time and say, you know, here's a bunch of cards that take advantage of this, and here's some cards that... You know, could deal with that, and if you're releasing five at a time, then yeah, you're gonna be like, all right, well, here's this busted card, but we didn't release a card that can deal with this card yet.
Right.
So, yeah, so. Have fun for the next week getting your ass kicked, and then we'll let you know how to deal with it.
Pretty much. So, that kind of wraps up, I think, our thoughts on how we feel about those, both R&D and sets and that type of thing. So, actually, I kind of want to hear your thoughts on it. So anybody out there who's listening to this, just get a hold of us. You know the normal ways, our Twitter, our Facebook, our site, the forums, however it works. I know there's a lot of people out there who have opinions on this, and there's a lot of people coming into the game now that it's starting to pick up steam.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually been a lot of Magic players who have been streaming the game. They've gotten keys, mm-hmm. and I think that's bringing in a lot of other players.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, the crossover in our audience, people who are subscribing to their streams already are now saying, oh, what's this game you're playing?
Yep. So that's pretty great. The next thing I guess we're going to talk about is the card of the week.
I think it is
that time for the card of the week and deck of the week. So you know what? Let's actually start out with the deck of the week.
Okay.
The deck of the week was actually submitted to us via Twitter by Writer1007. So I'm sure he's on the forums, and I've seen him tweet before, and I've seen him on, you know, all other kind of our platforms. And he submitted a deck to us called Scrapforge Dragons. Just, you know, we will retweet this deck list, and we're also going to post it in the official podcast post. So if you're actually on our site listening to this post, or if you're a dog catcher, it'll come through on the screen. You'll be able to follow the link. Essentially, the goal, as I see it, of his deck is to tech really fast, to level really fast. He's got Scorchmane Dragon in there and Scrapforge Titan. Granted, there's only two of each, which is an interesting decision that actually I kind of approve of.
More of a toolbox feel.
And more of a toolbox feel to it rather than just straight up teching through. But anyway, I mean, the feel of it, he's playing for spells. He's playing three Firestorm, three Sonic Pulse, and three Yurani Bolt, which is, that's a lot of removal. I mean, that is a lot of removal. And you combine it with, he's also got three Flameblade Champions in there, along with Magma Hounds. That's another huge source of removal. So, you know, you kind of get the feel from this deck that the point is to play these Technosmiths. He's playing three Technosmiths and three Synapsis Oracles.
Mm-hmm.
The feel for the deck here is to play, you know, these cards that will level, you know, push your level advantage. So you're going to play Technosmith leveling, you know, other cards, Scorchmane and Synapsis Oracle, or Scorchmane and Scrapforge in particular, are obviously his win conditions. He tweeted it out to us, and he said, what do you guys think? Honestly, as the deck is right now, I like it. It's not
overall
I really like the feel. I like the strategy. Out. Yeah, it's a really, you know, it's something that is bound to be seen all over the place. What I do enjoy about this is he kind of took a different take on teching fast.
Normally you see the stall strategy.
Exactly. Normally you see
Utera.
Exactly. It's combined with Aloya and Utera, and you usually see Glowstride Stags and other, you know, walls to get in your way and kind of slow you down or trade and make trade, that type of stuff. The strategy he took is actually one I like a bit better. It's more aggressive.
Much more proactive.
It's very, very proactive. He's taking the offensive, or in the situation being, if he's being overrun by a swarm, he's got multiple ways, you know, mass clearing to take care of it. Firestorm and Sonic Pulse and Flame Blade Champion.
And he's presenting threats.
Right.
Threats that they have to deal with, so that he can then get online and they're going to be behind once he is
online. Yeah,
you're
pushing, you're essentially trying to get ahead and stay ahead. I mean, obviously that's the point of every game, but it's very apparent in this point. You see, as soon as he hits, you know, level 2, he's going to start to pick up steam. And then as soon as he hits level 3, hopefully you're going to see a handful of level 3s and you're just going to, you're going to win right there. You're going to be like Scrapforge and then another awesome level 2 or 3 card, and that'll hopefully be your victory right there. The one card, and when he tweeted this out to us, that I felt didn't fit, is Windcaller Shaman. He does have 3 Windcaller Shamans in here.
Which is actually counterintuitive to what we were talking about last week with Card of the Week.
Right. Which was Flameblade, right.
But in this deck, Flameblade Champion is more just a threat that if they don't deal with it, their board dies. It's not something, it's not the base of the strategy.
Right, correct.
So Windcaller Shaman doesn't really fit with it.
Yep. So my thought was actually to cut the 3 Windcallers and add 2 Riftlashers. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with Riftlasher, he's a 4/7, and when he deals combat damage to another player, you can have him deal 3 damage to a target creature that player controls. It's essentially just another form of removal.
It's basically Flameblade Champion 4/5.
It's for a target, a single creature. It won't wipe the board.
Well, yeah, but it still acts basically the same.
Correct. It adds your 4th and 5th version of your Flameblade Champion. So it's a creature that gets in the way. You know, it's another body to have out there. And 4/7 at level 1 is actually really great stats. Yes. So he's going to last a turn. And then, obviously, his ability to boot is just as good. Now, you can make the argument that, well, what are you doing? That works. Riftlasher works really well with Windcaller Shaman, too. Yes, it does, but the thought here is to keep their board clean until you can tech up, and I think Riftlasher lends itself very, very well to that. That would leave us with 1 extra card, which I honestly want to put in the Forgeplate Sentry spot, bumping Forgeplate Sentry from 2 to 3. I think that Forgeplate Sentry is an amazing card. But on the same side of that token, you're going to want to, you know, your deck is going to be you fine-tune it for, again, the metagame. So I feel like if you were to add another Scrapforge Titan or Scorchmane Dragon, I don't think you would be wrong in that decision. I think that lending, you know, 1 more fatty in there is definitely really great. You know, those are our kind of thoughts on that deck. At least those are definitely my thoughts. I like the deck overall. I think it's got the great theme, and I like the different take on teching really fast. So again, that would have been reduce the 3 Windcallers and drop in 2 Riftlashers and something else.
So far in my testing, I've similarly gone after a very similar stall, keep the game as long as possible strategy, but I really like the idea of saying, hey, here's a threat, deal with this, I'm going to upgrade over here.
Right,
here's
exactly.
Another threat, deal with this, I'm going to upgrade over here.
Yeah, so...
thanks for sending it in, and...
it was definitely good. I think it was a great first deck submission that we had.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And yeah, if you want to be the deck of the week for next week, you can tweet us, you can post on our Facebook, you can post on our
site itself, you can contact us, you can post on the official forum, wherever you want to post it, let us know, you can email us directly, however you want to do it.
Okay, so next we're gonna move on to card of the week. And the card of the week we picked was Vengeful Spirit. We want to do cards from the demo deck, cards that everyone has access to. And Vengeful Spirit, to me, is a card that I think most people either they don't like it or they're indifferent. And to me, it's one of the most powerful cards that has come out for Soulforge.
I agree. I think that it is very, very, very strong. Its level 1 stats aren't particularly amazing. I don't know. I think that 4-2 is you know, it's subpar for a level 1 card.
Sure.
But when you take in their ability, and I guess for those of you out there who are listening to this and don't have access to actually view the card, Vengeful Spirit is a 4-2. Then whenever Vengeful Spirit is destroyed, a creature an opponent controls that's in the same lane as it gets -3 attack and -3 health. Then at the next level, it's an 8-6 with a -6 attack and -6 health. And then the next level after that is a 12-10 with -9 health and -9 attack. So, you know, at each level, it gets significantly stronger. I mean, its starting level, it can trade with almost everything at level 1. There's only a select few cards at level 1 that it doesn't trade with. And at level 1, it won't trade with Eloyan General, it won't trade with Corpse Crawler, Rageborn Hellion, or Synapsis Oracle. Those are the only cards it doesn't trade in. So, I mean, no matter what you're going to put in a lane, you're almost guaranteed a trade. So, that being said, at level 1, really, really powerful. And then it's going to, you know, playing him at level 1 is obviously leveling them, so you're going to get better at level 2. So once we get into level 2, there's actually even fewer cards. It's actually only Synapsis Oracle that it will not trade with. It will trade with every other card at level 2. But something that should be mentioned is Bright Steel Sentinel will, on the turn it is played, since it is a robot, you will not trade with it because it does give you 5 armor.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something to be noted. It will not trade with Bright Steel Sentinel on any level.
Or many cards that interact with Bright Steel, that the armor goes on with
Bright Steel. Right, exactly. Or, you know, if you're stacking armor, that type of thing. But, you know, in terms of a one-for-one trade, it's going to trade with it 90% of the time, I imagine. Then, you know, and then when you get to level 3, you know, there's, again, level 3 is where it kind of feels like it dwindles off, but not per se exactly. Trogrius and Scratchforge Titan and Synapsis Oracle, again, are the only 3 cards it will not trade with. Again, barring Steelforge, or Bright Steel Sentinel. Bright Steel Sentinel, again, gives you 10 armor at level 3, so you're not going to bash through that anytime soon. That being said, I think now that we know what it can trade with, and we know that it's pretty much everything, I think there are very few situations where you would not want to play it. I feel that you're always given the option, even if it's just an empty lane, you've got nothing else to play. I think playing the Vengeful Spirit is always going to be a play you're going to want to have. I don't imagine that there's a reason. I mean, obviously there's reasons you're not going to want to play it. Maybe you're going to favor it over Technosmith or something like that. There are cards you're going to want to play it over, but more often than not, I think that playing it is a better play. Something that's also notable about it is that it's still really strong, even when you draw it as level 1 later on.
It is very, it's not level dependent.
Right, like it really cards. Isn't a level, per se a level
and, dependent. And one of the interesting thing is if you end up at level 2 with like 3 level 2s in your hand, this is what you don't level.
Right.
Because it is just useful at every level, that this, you don't feel pressured to level it.
Actually, I feel like at level 2 is more often the situation that you see, is that since I do value Vengeful Spirit as such a high commodity card, once I have leveled them to 2, I actually stop playing them unless I really need to stop the threat.
Yes.
I will start to value other cards over it because when it get, I mean, it will trade with everything. I didn't do any stats on Vengeful Spirit 2 versus cards at level 3, which I will do later and post up, but I think that a level 2 Vengeful Spirit is right around average. You can kind of more often than not skip over it and trade with.
Well, let's look at it. It would be equivalent to a 14-12?
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of level 3s that have those exactly, stats or less.
Yes, exactly, or less. There's only a handful that are more than that.
And even in the cases where it doesn't trade, you still have the ancillary benefit of the reduced attack.
Reduced attack, yep. And that really is the benefit. The reduced attack is awesome, and the reduced health is awesome. The one thing that I really, really enjoy about it is that it actually is a clever way to dodge armor. And armor is the bane of my existence at this point. I can't stand it. It's so obnoxious, but it really is. I mean, the -3 or -6 or -9 is huge. That's the reason it trades. I mean, and it, like you said, Murden, the additional benefit of the minus attack is great. I mean, even if you don't kill the creature, chances are it's not going to do too much more damage.
And to be fair, it's something we haven't even mentioned yet, is you don't have to trigger this in combat.
No.
That anything right. that removes this card...
is going to trigger its ability.
Exactly.
So that leaves us with...
synergies.
Again, great Necrom synergies here. Corpse Crawler, Grave Pact.
Any card where you... And we expect to probably see more as well, where you can discard or sacrifice one of your own creatures.
Right. And
you're still going to get a lot of the benefit. I think you're absolutely right talking about it. It's mean to armor because it just doesn't care.
It doesn't care, right? Armor says damage for additional damage. First turns damage.
Your Forge Plate into a 1/1 with armor 1.
Right. Yeah. Not so great. And another card that triggered it was Scourge Flame Sorcerer.
What's the name of that card? You.
Yuru, yep, plays really well with Yuru. There's a lot of cards out there that it synergizes wonderfully with.
And I'm sure there will be more.
And there will be more. There most definitely will be more. So I feel like this is one of the stronger commons, if you will. I'm using air quotes here because we don't exactly know if it's a common or uncommon or anything yet. But I'm just going to assume that it's a common. It's a much stronger common than we've seen, It's leaps and bounds better than Lightning Worm.
Well, there wouldn't be a podcast without some air quotes.
It wouldn't be. I know. This that was actually our third air quotes because I used them twice.
So I'll go ahead and be that guy and admit that when I first started playing, I looked at this card, Vengeful Spirit, and I thought, I don't like it. The stats are weak. I don't really see the benefit.
Right.
And the first podcast I came here to do with you guys, we were talking about different cards and this and that before the cast, and you brought up Vengeful Spirit. And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't really like that card that much. I don't think it's that strong. And you looked at me like, what are you, crazy?
What are you, nuts? The card is amazing.
It trades with just about everything. And I thought about it, and I realized that with the... At level 1, a -3/-3 on top of damage is
really great.
Kind of a lot.
Yeah.
And I hadn't thought about it previously. And the more I did think about it, the more the value of this card just rose in my mind. I never realized it at first. I probably should have, but it just never clicked that this little 4/2
actually
had all this power.
Yes, the 7/5. That being said, is that I'm hoping the point of doing these cards of the week is actually to open more players' eyes to cards they may have overlooked or thought were terrible. Because I guarantee it, we are going to do casts where the card of the week is a terrible card. We will do them. People will want to hear our thoughts on it.
And we will tell you.
And
it's
we
a
will
terrible
tell you
card.
Exactly. I mean, Lightning Worm is a terrible card. So
obligatory hunting pack.
Hunting
that
pack.
That we must
anybody?
Munch in every Forge cast.
Yeah. Hunting pack. Not. Oh god. So that's essentially the point of these. And I know there's actually a bunch of communities. I shouldn't say communities, but there's a bunch of people out there who do kind of like a card of the week kind of column. Or it's card of the week topic, and they talk about it in the forums and that type of thing. But I feel that the more people out there kind of letting people know, is you're not going to fall into that beginner's trap. You're not going to feel like it's just like, we're just trying to guide you away from the card. That's all. I mean, you like it and you want to play it because the art's awesome? Hell, you play it because that art's awesome. You've got more respect than I
will
ever have.
You make it your own.
You will make it your card. And I guess that kind of rounds up the card of the week. Again, that was Vengeful Spirit, and it was submitted. We didn't actually get a submission for one. Well, we did, but we decided to ignore. I'm sorry, guy.
We were looking for specifically cards that were in the first two demo decks so that we could talk about something that everybody had seen and played around
Which,
with
to
a
be
little
fair,
bit.
I don't think we mentioned
We did not. No, that's absolutely fair.
But now you know.
Right. The next thing I guess we're gonna talk about is we do have a new addition to the Forge Gamers team. Forge Soul has actually joined our team, and he will be writing some articles and doing some editorials and whatnot. He's going to be bringing a lot to the team. I'm really excited, and we're happy to have him on board.
Yeah, absolutely. And just wanted to say welcome officially. We're all very excited. And like you said, we think he's going to add a lot. He's going to bring a lot to the table.
Right. He's going to bring, yeah, he's just going to, again, it's just another person to the Forge Gamer team. It's going to round us out even better. Because right now we're pretty great, but now we're even better.
Yes. The only thing better than great is even better.
So the next thing that we're going to kind of touch on here is just an update on the Grimgaunt competition. This went live last Monday, and the community really took to it, which I absolutely love. I love that the fact that the community likes this. I like that there's people out there actually streaming their Grimgaunt competition. That's really great. So as it is now, The standing for the Grimgon is, I don't know how it actually pronounced, should I pronounce his name? It's Strange. He's at Strange on Twitter, and he's actually on the forums, and he tweeted to us with a 104 power Grimgon. Ooh. So he is currently the leader in Grimgon for the competition. Yeah, and the second place we have is by Chax on the forum, who has a 95, I think, level Grimgon. So that's where that stands. That ends the end of this coming week here. But if you haven't, get in on that. Another thing I wanted to actually mention is that is not the highest powered Grimgaunt we've seen. The highest powered Grimgaunt that has been submitted is actually over on our Facebook, and it was 112 powered Grimgaunt. But the person who submitted it is actually playing against a starter deck and not a demo deck. So, bummer there. Sorry about that. Jeez. But that is definitely impressive. The highest one we've seen so far.
Yeah, and just to kind of quickly reiterate, and the rules for that competition, they're all up on the site, on the post, if you're looking for specifics, but we are hoping that people are doing this on the PC beta, and if not, you have to at least be using the starter decks. It's a bit of
the demo decks. You have to be playing the demo deck against the other demo deck. You have to be playing the Necrom Utera versus the Alolan Tempest deck.
Right.
Those are what you need to be playing.
That is a pretty impressive Grimgaunt, but unfortunately that one
will not count. We will throw them a 50-cent nice thanks for trying. No, just kidding.
I think it's interesting that I was kind of keeping an eye on submissions because I was curious what would happen when a card got to 100. I was curious if they had programmed for it.
Well,
to be honest,
this is something I kind of want to touch on. My girlfriend and I were playing some Soulforge last night, and we got playing. And we got to turn 7, and the iPad literally shit itself. The thing would not make a move. It took like 15 seconds for it to calculate damage and do combat. What happened here? Is this something they didn't really plan for? Like, what's going on? There's obviously some type of problem there. So, you know, if you're listening, fix it. You know, one other thing that I think I wanted to touch on is that I would really like to see a PC roadmap from Stoneblade at this point. The PC demo is out. It's in our hands. It's been out for, what, 2 weeks now?
I think. Two and some change.
We shouldn't be in the dark anymore. We should have a PC roadmap. There's no reason we shouldn't. They should have their own roadmap, and they should not be afraid to share it with us.
Here's hoping they do.
Yeah, here's to hoping they do have a roadmap. So I would really like to see tentative dates. I'm not saying they have to be on schedule to the T, but they need to be there. You need to keep your community informed. We all want more. We all want to know what time frame we're looking at here. So,
yeah, I was definitely disappointed by a few months in the PC beta, but I would rather have disappointing information than no information.
At all, yep. Maybe just like every time we do a cast, we tend to do a cast about a topic, and then it seems to pop up on the forums like literally a day later, whether our cast has been published or not. So I think that the community's on the same page with us here. I think they want it as well. Hopefully, that's what we'll see. So
okay, that's going to do it for us.
That's going to do it, guys. So
hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on our website. Yeah. Facebook. All over the place.
We're everywhere.
Just hit us up.
Just find us. Let us know what you think.
And that's going to do it for us. I'm Nelican.
Lovecore.
Meridian. Take it easy.